back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night. You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right. Oh, and that's all right. You can hide with your colors and study your pain.
This is the Quality News Network. 3,200 U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan will have their combat tours extended for 4 months. NATO will also add another combat brigade, the top NATO commander said today. Despite U.S. urging Afghanistan will not allow its heroin-producing poppy fields to be sprayed with herbicide, Afghan President Hamid Karzai received pressure from lawmakers who feared there would be a popular backlash against them. President Bush will ask Congress for an additional $10.5 billion for security and reconstruction in Afghanistan. Since the U.S.-led invasion against the Taliban in 2001, the U.S. has spent more than $14 billion on such aid. Senate Democrats are hesitant about President Bush's upcoming request for $1.2 billion for Iraqi reconstruction. Chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Joseph Biden, wants to make sure the money does not go to fuel corruption or the insurgency in Iraq. In Lebanon, at least 3 people were killed in the third day of violence between pro- and anti-government supporters. Today's clashes were around the campus of Beirut's Arab University, where students threw rocks, sticks, and other objects. Afterwards, the military put a nighttime curfew in place for the first time since 1996. In Paris, at a donor conference for aid to Lebanon today, $6.7 billion were pledged by more than 40 nations and financial institutions. In central Baghdad today, 26 people were killed by a suicide car bomb blast, which occurred in a mostly Shiite neighborhood. It happened shortly after Iraq's prime minister warned militants that the U.S.-Iraqi joint security crackdown is coming. A soldier from the 101st Airborne Division pleaded guilty today in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, to the murder of 3 Iraqi detainees. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison. In Ecuador, the country's defense minister was killed yesterday when her helicopter collided with another military helicopter midair. The Israeli president's request for a 3-month leave was approved today by an Israeli parliamentary committee. He faces charges of rape and sexual misconduct. Southern California Republican Representative Duncan Hunter launched his 2008 presidential bid in South Carolina today. He cited Ronald Reagan in his speech and said he wants to continue the former president's legacy. Democratic Senator Barack Obama, who is considering a 2008 presidential run, said within the next 6 years, every American should have health care coverage. You are listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 AM in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The CDC is investigating an outbreak of norovirus that sickened more than 300 passengers and crew members on a worldwide cruise aboard the luxury QE2. The new formula for Crisco, the first change in 95 years, will no longer contain trans fats. Medical research has shown that trans fats can increase the risk of heart disease because they raise bad cholesterol and lower good cholesterol. The former treasurer of NBC Universal has been arrested on charges of stealing more than $800,000 from the media company. He is accused of using some of the stolen money for private vacations to the Caribbean. The Labor Department reports that the number of Americans filing for jobless benefits went up last week to 325,000, reversing the large declines of the previous 2 weeks. The U.S. Labor Department also announced that Walmart has settled an overtime case and will pay thousands of employees more than $33 million in back pay. The National Association of Realtors reports that in December, sales of existing homes were down by the largest amount in 17 years. Ford Motor Company posted its largest loss in its history. The automaker lost $5.8 billion in the fourth quarter, largely due to restructuring costs and declining sales. Light sweet crude trading at $54.23 a barrel. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow is down 117 points. The Nasdaq is down 32. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramov.
This is a top to, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
right.
11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a very special edition. Today is known by the white people in Australia as Australia Day. I like to refer to it as Invasion Day. And again, as I get into the show, I'm starting to get a little bit worried here that someone's got it out for me. I can't get into the production chat at the moment. So, Agnes, if you can pop your mic open for a second and just tell me that you actually have me on your end, I would much appreciate it.
I have you here, John, and I can't get into production chat either.
Okay, well, it seems as though there must be a bit of a Sigma server problem. So you and I will just do this thing on the fly, and you'll poke me on with bumper music and tell me to get out and all that kind of thing. So we'll make this whole thing work. So thank you so much, darling. And
you're
welcome. So we've got a huge show today. And I'm going to interrupt the theme for the track of the day this week because of the fact that it's Invasion Day. And we're going to play a little bit of Aboriginal rock and roll music from Yathu Yindi, but we'll get there later. Now, folks, you'll remember that, you know, over the last couple of days I've been going off on tirades about jingoism here in Australia. And, you know, I'm seriously going to be on an Australian bashing day today. And, yes, I love this country in for many things. It's amazing sights and its terrain and its indigenous history. But the redneck jingoistic racism that goes on in the non-indigenous population just absolutely angers me beyond belief. And so today, folks, we're going to give you a little bit of an education on the alternate history of Australia, which is more like the real history of Australia. So what exactly is Australia Day? Well, from the Australia Day Wikipedia, it says January 26, 1788 was the date on which the first fleet under Captain Arthur Phillip arrived at Sydney Cove and set up the colony of New South Wales. Formal possession in the reading of Phillip's commission took place on the 7th of February. Now, what I find interesting is that this holiday really didn't become nationally kind of coordinated in the way that it is and officially called Australia Day until something like 1994. As Germaine Greer once said, the indigenous people of Australia just hoped that the newcomers would assimilate. And they didn't. They took over. And the indigenous people of Australia took such great pride and care in this nation and its ecosystem and its spirit for thousands of years. And in just a little over 200 years, the white people have pretty much destroyed it. It's just really, really depressing. And I just find the fact that there's going to be a whole bunch of flag waving and barbecuing and all this kind of stuff, and the real Australians have a very different view of what this day really means. And I've made a habit since I got up to speed in this country of, when I see people on this day, I don't say Happy Australia Day, I say Happy Invasion Day. Because that's what it signifies. The original invasion and colonization of Australia. And you think that the Americans did a job on the Native Americans? Whoa, it is pale in comparison to what white Australia has done to the indigenous population of this country. And I've got, I just find the whole thing, it's this constant rewriting of history just absolutely fundamentally wrong. And there are many, many links on today's show post. You can have a look, and we have a picture of the real Australian flag, the Aboriginal flag, which I just think is gorgeous. And I remember a few years ago when I was living in South Sydney, just at the end of the street where my friend Scott and I shared an apartment, was a local grade school, and they were setting up for an indigenous festival of some sort, and I saw them stringing up all these little Aboriginal flags all over the place, and I walked by and I said, "Ah, the real Australian flag," and all I got was these wonderful young Aboriginal boys and girls and their teachers just look at me and give me this huge smile, because I think it was a rare instance of recognizing who the true caretakers and real Australians are. And the cover-ups of violence, murders, that continue to go on. And the one thing that you have to understand is until the 1970s, Australia still had the White Australia policy, to which they used to remove Aboriginal children from their families and put them in Victorian schools. And the idea was that they could breed the blackness out of them. And that's appalling. That is absolutely appalling. And this kind of almost still goes on today, except it's not right up front. Not that we're pulling Aboriginal children from their families anymore, but the Australian government, federal government, and the state governments do not recognize the damage done, and they do not recognize, we do this in America too. We paint this very surrealistic image of ourselves, and it's so unbelievably false. Unbelievably false. It's just amazing. Now, we're going to take a break, And when we come back, we might not get to the track of the day straight away, because I've got some stuff to cover before I play Treaty from Yathu Yindi, who I got to do monitors for once, and it was fantastic. So when we come back, I'm going to give you some insight onto what still goes on today that is continuing to destroy the Aboriginal nation. So you're here with Foxed Up on a very, very special Invasion Day edition. We'll be right back here on the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you. What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!
Good on you, Agnes. Excellent, excellent. Hello, Cleveland. Boy, I've been lost in those steam tunnels myself. But anyway, welcome back to Foxed Up, everybody. Okay. As I was saying before the break, you know, I lived in South Sydney, and after moving from that particular place, my partner and I, Gail, rented a house in Redfern, and we were one block off of what is known as the block in Redfern. You may remember in the news last year, riots between the Aboriginals and police. Well, Everly Street, known as the block, it was and is you know, basically public housing that was set up for the displaced Aboriginals in South Sydney. And it's been after they built it, it's been completely ignored. It's decrepit. You see the sad face of being Aboriginal in Australia, which is unfortunately drug addiction, alcoholism, and the. However, there was a young boy by the name of T.J. Hickey, who was one of our neighbors, and we knew him. Didn't know him well, but we knew him. He used to ride his bike. Used to see him keeping an eye on his I believe his brother and his sister or his cousin. I'm not quite sure. Lived with his aunt, and he died 3 years ago, basically by the cause of the New South Wales police. So from Green Left Weekly. Which you can find at greenleft.org.au, is a piece here that says, TJ campaign continues. The third anniversary of the death of Aboriginal teenager TJ Hickey will be on February 14th. TJ was impaled on a metal fence while being chased by Redfern police. Had police followed proper medical practices, it is likely that TJ would have survived. Following his death, the cover-up began by the then-premier Labor's Bob Carr, Police Commissioner Ken Maroney, and the New South Wales Police Force. Two events have been organized by the Indigenous Social Justice Association and the Socialist Alliance to commemorate the anniversary. A public meeting will be held on February 7th at the Bamali Aboriginal Arts Center. And a rally will also be held on the 14th at 10:30 a.m. at the fence line where TJ was killed, near the corner of George and Phillip Streets, Waterloo, for those of you that are in Sydney. Bowie Hickey told Green Left Weekly that the anniversary was a day of mourning, all black deaths in custody and the struggle for justice for everyone. We can't rest until we get a little bit of justice, she said. Queensland Aboriginal activist Sam Watson will attend both events and will bring a message of solidarity from the Campaign for Justice for the Mulrinji, which is one of the local tribes or nations. For more information, you can ring Ray Jackson, blah, 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 blah. Now, this is what those riots last year were kind of about. You know, I remember TJ constantly on his bicycle riding around the local streets, and, you know, the Redfern police can be extremely oppressive. Gail and I had to stop using our living room in our home because throughout the afternoon, little faces with little blue checkered hats would just stick their heads in your window and look inside your house. The police will walk three wide down the sidewalk so the local children have to actually walk into the street around them. And this is what I witnessed as a resident of the area. And I remember when we moved there, you know, there were a whole bunch of, you know, white Australia that said, oh, you don't want to move there, that's the block, it's dangerous there, and this, that, and the other thing. I'll tell you what, the only threat that I ever had or felt was from the actual police. And I think the simple thing was, is Gail and I might have been white and living there, but we did not come off as any threat. And in fact, when we moved out of the area, up along the corner, there was a gentleman who rented a house who kind of became point man, from what I could tell, to keeping an eye on folks. And as we were packing up, I saw him out on the open land next to his home with a pickaxe. And I walked up and said, hey, man, what are you doing? And he holds the pickaxe way up in the air, looks up at some of the old Aboriginal boys leaning up against the wall at the community center and says, I'm reclaiming my land rights. And what he was doing was building a community garden. What he said, look, man, he said, if the government doesn't want to help these people, the least we can do is plant a community garden so they can come up here and get some fresh vegetables in which to eat. So Gail and I went into our seed and garden tool stocks, and everything that we had that was extra came up and delivered to him and donated, because we just thought that this is you know, had to be something that we supported. So, you know, and it's been a very, very sad thing, this thing for TJ, and it's caused, it's made the strife in the area even worse than it already was. So, and, okay, on similar issues, we've been having a bit of a thing up in Queensland as well. An Aboriginal man was beaten to death by the police. The coroner found the police guilty. They virtually admitted it. And then the prosecutor dropped all charges, saying that the man's liver that was split in half happened because of a complicated fall. So also out of the Green Weekly, which is probably the best alternative newspaper in Australia, it says, the struggle for justice for Palm Island man who died on November 19, 2004 in a police watch house from horrific injuries within 1 hour of being arrested is growing. Widespread protests rocked Queensland within days of the Department of Public Prosecution's Leanne Clare announcing she would not lay any charges regarding Mulrunji's death, claiming that his four broken ribs and liver split in two occurred from a complicated fall. Given that the DPP's finding contradicted an early deputy coroner's report, which found that Senior Sergeant Chris Hurley caused the death of Mulrunji and stated that Mulrunji could never even have taken, should never have been taken into custody, the protesters demanded that Hurley be charged immediately. The 2,000 people who rallied in Brisbane on December 20th denounced Labor Premier Eddie for endorsing the DPP decision. They heard speakers from a broad cross-section of the Aboriginal community, joined by trade unionists, civil liberties lawyers, and media personalities such as Ernie Dingo. In Townsville, 1,500 protesters marched, and marches were also held in Cairns, Innisfail, and Thursday Island. Outside Queensland, hundreds rallied in Melbourne, Sydney, and Perth, each with their own stories of local Aboriginal deaths in custody. And Premier Peter Beattie just goes along with this stuff. And it's disgusting. How does someone's liver split in two from a fall? You cannot explain that out to me. I'm sorry. You know, it just goes beyond all reason. And the fact that the coroner that who did the autopsy said it was from injuries sustained under custody, and then suddenly it turns around, this really, really scary-looking white lady says, hey, we ain't gonna press charges. Because he's a white cop, and when that was just one of them black folks. And this is where I am so ashamed at times to live in this country. You know, I thought America could be racist, but it takes a very different form in this country. A very different form. And I find it absolutely appalling. And you know, the Aboriginals, you know, refer to this day as a day of mourning. And, you know, I know that this is usually an environmental show, but this actually, this is the whole story of the Australian environment right here. The Aboriginals lived at one with nature here. You know, they cared for the spirit of this great brown land. And white Australia has destroyed it. Absolutely destroyed it. Makes me sick. Makes me absolutely sick. And yet, Australian tourism and the media love to hold up things Aboriginal for money-making reasons, for tourism, you know, come and see the savages. It's disgusting. The truly advanced culture in this nation is and was the Aboriginal people, without a doubt. So, folks, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break, and we're going to come back and do some more, and we're going to do our track of the day, which we're going to do a little bit of Yathu Yindi, which is some Aboriginal musos and some non-Aboriginal musos that come together to create a very, very great, interesting sound. So please stick around. You're here with John Fox coming to you from Sydney, Australia on Invasion Day. We'll be back right after this.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive. Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, this is Sarah Jessica Parker. It's hard to believe that 1.5 million people in New York City are at risk of going hungry. More than half of them are children and the elderly. The Food Bank for New York City provides the food that soup kitchens, food pantries, and shelters use to feed those in need. Now more than ever, we need your help in the fight against hunger. For more information, visit the Food Bank at www.foodbanknyc.org.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on a very, very special edition as we cover Invasion Day, but the whites call it Australia Day. Now, I don't know if some of you may not be familiar with a really wonderful journalist from Australia here by the name of John Pilger. And the Australian media just ignores this man, but he's a very worldly man and looks at Australia for what it is. And you can see his documentaries, actually, if you go to Google Video and just search up John Pilger. You can see some interesting stuff on the New World Order and some other things. But he did a piece in lieu of Australia Day on the 19th of January. And it says, "Cruelty and xenophobia shame and stir the lucky country." And he says, the Australian writer Donald Horne meant the title of his celebrated book, The Lucky Country, as irony. Quote, "Australia is a lucky country run by second-rate people who share its luck," unquote, he lamented in 1964, describing much of the Australian elite as unfailingly unoriginal, race-obsessed, and enthralled to imperial power and its wars. From Britain's 19th-century opium adventures to Washington's current travesty in Iraq, Australians have been sent to fight faraway people with whom they have no quarrel and who offer no threat of invasion. Growing up here, I was assured that this was a sacred tradition. But then another Australia was discovered. The only war-dead Australians that had never mourned were found right under their noses. Those of a remarkable indigenous people who had owned and cared for this ancient land for thousands of years, then fought and died in its defense when the British invaded. In a land littered with cenotaphs, not one honored them. For many whites, awakening was rude. For others, it was thrilling. In the 1970s, thanks largely to the brief, brave, and subverted labor government of Gough Whitlam, the universities opened their studies to these heresies and their gates to a society Mark Twain once identified as almost entirely populated by the lower orders. A secret history revealed that long before the rest of the Western world, Australian working people had fought for and won a minimum wage, an 8-hour working day, pensions, child benefits, and the vote for women. And now there was an astonishing ethnic diversity, and it had happened as if by default. There simply were not enough Britons and blue-eyed Balts who wanted to come. Australia is not often news, cricket and bushfires aside. That is a pity, because the regression of this social democracy into a state of fabricated fear and xenophobia is an object lesson for all societies claiming to be free. In power for more than a decade, the Liberal Prime Minister John Howard comes from the outer reaches of Australia's neocons. In 1988, he announced that a future government led by him would pursue a One Australia policy, a forerunner to Pauline Hanson's infamous One Nation Party, whose targets were black Australians and immigrants. Howard's targets have been similar. One of his first acts as Prime Minister was to cut $400 million from the Aboriginal Affairs budget. Political correctness, he said, has gone too far. Today, black Australians have one of the lowest life expectancies in the world, and their health is worse, the worst in the world. An entirely preventable disease, trachoma, beaten in many poor countries, still blinds them because of appalling living conditions. The impoverishment of black communities, which I have seen change little over the years, was described in 2006 by Save the Children as some of the worst we have seen in our world, all around the world. Instead of political respect in the form of a national land rights law, a war of legal attrition has been waged against the Aborigines, and the epidemic and black suicides continue. And the epidemics of black suicides continue. Howard rejoices in his promotion of Australian values, a very Australian sycophancy to the sugared values of foreign U.S. power. The darling of a group of white supremacists who buzz around the Murdoch-dominated press and radio talkback hosts, the Prime Minister has used acolytes to attack the black armband view of history as if the mass killing and resistance of Indigenous Australians did not happen. The fine historian Henry Reynolds, author of The Other Side of the Frontier, has been thoroughly smeared. Along with other revisionists, in 2005, Andrew Jaspin, a Briton newly appointed editor of the Melbourne Age, was subjected to a vicious neocon campaign that accused him of reducing the age to another liberal guardian. Flag-waving and never-ending hand-on-heart jingoism about which skeptical Australians once felt a healthy ambivalence are now standard features at sporting and other public events. These serve to prepare Australians for renewed militarism and war, as ordained by the Bush administration, and to cover attacks on Australia's Muslim community. Speak out, and you may break a 2005 law of sedition meant to intimidate with the threat of imprisonment of up to 7 years. Once described in the media as George Bush's deputy sheriff, Howard did not demur when Bush, on hearing this, promoted him to sheriff for Southeast Asia. Like a mini Blair, Howard has sent troops and federal police to the Solomon Islands, Tonga, Papua New Guinea, and East Timor. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And you can also check out everything John Pilger at johnpilger.com, and I suggest you do that because he's a phenomenal writer. And, you know, ever since I've been here, you know, the Aboriginal people have really asked for not very much. And the biggest thing that they've asked for is an apology from the Australian government for the lost generation. And Howard refuses to say, I'm sorry. And you have all, and most of white Australia, well, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that most of white Australia. But white Australia in the media says, why should we say sorry for things that we didn't do? Well, you know what? If you were old enough to vote while these policies were still going on, you are responsible. If you didn't stand up to these policies, you are responsible. And you should be held accountable. And so that's why this today's track of the day comes in. And Yathu Yindi is Yolunga for Child and Mother. Is an Australian band with Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal members. The Aboriginal members come from near Yirrkala and the Gove Peninsula in the Northern Territories. Ahim Land. The band tries to combine aspects of both musical cultures. Their sound varies from traditional Aboriginal songs, which are literally thousands of years old, to the modern pop and rock songs. In almost all their songs, they try to blend the typical instruments that are associated with pop rock bands, such as guitars and drums, with the traditional didgeridoo and clapsticks. They also adapted traditional dance to accompany their music. In a broader sense, they promote the need for mutual respect and understanding and the coming together of different cultures. Their most widely known song is Treaty, found on their 1991 Tribal Voice album. And there's a link to the Yathu Yindi website. Go and have a look. Just some fantastic stuff. And these folks have been a voice for their people. And it's just some really, really great stuff. So, with no further ado, Yathu Yindi and Treaty. Roll it, Agnes.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is the known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robertson. After time, after time, and it goes back for years. You know, let's just talk a minute about his business ventures. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breathed that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, they did.
You, no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yeah, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network. Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here with a very, very special edition, Invasion Day Australia special. Now, to wrap things up, if you thought I was exaggerating, this should remove all doubt. And just really quickly, this show is just purely dedicated to the incredible people of the Aboriginal nations of this country. I've had some wonderful conversations with members of the community over the years, and they're amazing people. And on the one-year anniversary of 9/11, I was walking through Everly Street, the block, and a couple of the old Aboriginal boys leaning up against the wall, drinking their beer, turned to me, who I'd never spoken to, said, "Hey, man, heard your accent before. Where are you from?" I said, "Well, originally New Jersey, man." And they turned to me and said, "We hope you didn't lose anybody last year." And I didn't hear this from the white community. I heard this from the Aboriginal community. That just gives you a little bit. That's just
I'll leave it at that. But here we go. Report on Indigenous Disadvantage Suppressed. A confidential report titled Partnerships Queensland was drafted last year by the Queensland Department of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Policy. The report, which found that there was an urgent need to improve the standard of living for Indigenous people and take immediate and sustained action, was withheld from public release before the September state election. Premier Beattie's government abolished the department after Labor's re-election. The report is a baseline study of Aboriginal living standards and was to form part of the government's 2005 to 2010 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander policy. According to News Limited, which published extracts of the report on January 17th, the study found that Aboriginal children aged 7 to 14 years are 26 to 37 times more likely to be admitted to detention than non-Indigenous children. Between 24 years of age, they are 6 times more likely to contract a sexually transmitted disease and 12 times more likely to be jailed. Queensland Aborigines aged 25 and over are 8 times less likely to have a job, 5 times more likely to be charged by police, and 10 times more likely to be put in jail than non-Aborigines. The report also found that young children residing on Aboriginal Deed of Grant and Trust communities were 23 to 40 times more likely to be admitted to hospital for assault than Queensland non-Indigenous young children. Indigenous children comprised 40.2% of all admissions for those aged 0 to 4 years who had been assaulted. The report stated that there was an urgent need to improve Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's standard of living and recommended immediate and sustained action to reduce the disparity in all life stages. Ponder that. Okay? And this is a Labor state government. And I have openly supported Mr. Beattie over time because I thought he was a good guy. Well, my view of him has completely flipped 180 degrees. And this happens everywhere in this country. And it really, really upsets me. I mean, I can't even tell you, like, just kind of how emotional I am having to cover this stuff, because it's just so difficult. You know, I've been amazed at how this subject just gets continued to be swept under the carpet, and when it's not swept under the carpet, the Aborigines are used as political footballs. And no action is ever taken. I just really cannot believe. That's not even the right term, because I can believe this world is so twisted at times that it just gets to be beyond belief. And white Australia, while destroying this nation, consistently profits off them. And I didn't get to cover it, and maybe I'll do some more of this tomorrow, possibly, if I can stomach it. One of the biggest supporters of the Aboriginal people has been Peter Garrett, who is now a minister. And there are now signs that the Aboriginal nations are feeling really, really done by him now that he's gone into politics, because he hasn't been as vocal as he was in the past. And what is it about Australian government that seems to strip people of their moral objectives? I just don't get it. It just makes me really, really, really angry, upset. There are times that I just want to weep for the Aboriginal people. They were peaceful people who loved their land and truly were caretakers.
And, you know, I mean, in colonial Australia, you know, the police forces in the states would hire, without pay, Aboriginal trackers to help the local police. Did they ever refer to them by their real names? No. They were usually referred to as boy. And how two-faced is it to utilize the unbelievable skill and talent of observation and understanding of nature that these folks have for their own use, but yet will not recognize them as real Australians? And so when these jingoistic, flag-waving rednecks do things like they did at the big day out last year, saying, "Kiss the flag or I will thump you," claiming that they are real Australians, they are completely and utterly deluded. They're lying to themselves just to make themselves feel better. And some of the policies that Australia has had would have made Hitler blush. The most successful eugenics program in the world was the White Australia policy. And it's disgusting. It truly, truly, truly is disgusting. Before we get out of here, I would like to just remind everybody that, you know, those of you that were listening to Guy James, our friend Phil from Veterans for Peace rang in, and there are still slots left on the buses to go to the rally in Washington, D.C. And any support that you can throw their way, I would appreciate it. And, you know, it's time that all around this great planet of ours that the people take the power back for the people. And, just, you know, and best of luck for all that are going to be involved in that on the weekend. I hope it ends up being a monumental turnout and that we scare the bejesus out of our government. And those of you who have ever seen, you know, the film V for Vendetta, the people should not fear their government. Their government should fear its people. And ideas are bulletproof. Never forget that. So, folks, thank you so much for being with me today on this very kind of special edition of the program. Thank you to Agnes for producing, even though we made it through without our usual communication facilities. and thank you to my partner Gail, who did most of the research for this show. In fact, probably all of it. She stayed up last night and compiled a whole bunch of information for me because she has been incensed with the jingoism in this country recently. And don't forget, Ben Birch is still running his fundraiser over at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the Carpenters for everything they do for the network. Thank you to Bob Kincaid for announcing the program. Bob will be coming up next. Just folks, it wasn't a very green program today. We'll return to normal programming, but as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We will see you tomorrow.
I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be, as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
This is the Quality News Network. 3,200 U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan will have their combat tours extended by 4 months. Last week, Defense Secretary Robert Gates traveled to the country and met with top military commanders who said they need more troops. NATO will also add another combat brigade, the top NATO commander said today. Despite U.S. urging, Afghanistan will not allow its heroin-producing poppy fields to be sprayed with herbicide. Afghan President Hamid Karzai received pressure from Afghan lawmakers who feared there would be a popular backlash against them. There was a record crop of opium in Afghanistan in 2006. President Bush will ask Congress for $10.5 billion more for security and reconstruction in Afghanistan, since the U.S.-led invasion against the country make that the Taliban back in 2001. The U.S. has spent more than $14 billion in such aid. Senate Democrats are hesitant about President Bush's upcoming request for $1.2 billion for Iraqi reconstruction. There are concerns about how the money will be used. In Lebanon, at least 3 people were killed in the third day of violence between pro- and anti-government supporters. Today's clashes around the campus of Beirut's Arab University, it's where students threw rocks, sticks, and other objects. In Paris, a donor conference for aid to Lebanon began today, $7.6 billion pledged by more than 40 nations and financial institutions. In central Baghdad today, 26 people were killed by a suicide car bomb blast, which occurred in a mostly Shiite neighborhood. 54 were wounded. It happened shortly after Iraq's prime minister warned militants that the U.S.-Iraqi joint security crackdown is on its way. A soldier from the 101 Airborne Division pleaded guilty today in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, to the murder of 3 Iraqi detainees. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison.